Hello and welcome to Teacher Talk. I'm Matt Snyder.
And I'm Rachel Bender.
So, Rachel, do you want to catch us up on what we did last time?
Yes, in our first ever episode last time, we discussed the definition, science, and implications of the growth mindset. And we also talked about the fixed mindset and how that can hinder us and our students. We also defined and explored real life examples of the power of growth mindset thinking as some scientific research behind the growth mindset movement. And in addition, we also concluded with brief discussion of the famous Carol Dweck's TED Talk about the power of yet, which was great.
Always love to listen to Carol Dweck. So today I thought we could take a brief step away from theory and actually get to the meat of the matter and talk about how we can actually implement a growth mindset classroom. So we're going to talk about one specific activity today called the PIT activity. And it kind of describes how learning occurs. We've got a couple of cool sound clips to help you remember the different stages of the pit of learning. Well, that sounds ominous. The pit of learning.
No,
I love it.
Yeah. I just clarified a little bit there. The learning pit was developed by James Nottingham. And I believe it comes out of Northumberland in the UK. So I guess I think that's pretty awesome. And it was designed in 1999 by a working teacher. And who had been part of a television show. And I guess during the filming, they had been asked how they explained to their pupils why they thought challenge in particular was good for them. And that's where I guess he got the idea that, you know, he thought about it and thought about that. When students are learning, they're going through a storm or a pit. They go through a process. It's that learning process. And he used, I guess, the analogy, the pit analogy. And he later down the road switched that into four stages to the model, which I believe was concept, conflict, construct, and consider. And he apparently first published this in, I guess, 2010. Regardless, there's definitely a lot of values of the learning pit that teachers and educators find very useful when it comes to students. Sorry.
And that's very interesting because that's actually not where I came up with this activity. I didn't actually come up with this activity. This activity has actually been published in Joe Bowler's book, Limitless Mind, which I think was actually, interestingly enough, developed separately from what was the name of the gentleman you were talking about?
James Nottingham.
James Nottingham. Okay. So it looks like it was developed separately, or maybe there was some cross implications there. So yeah, I guess repetition in research is always a good thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I did want to also add that we would be going into designing some growth mindset lessons and what that might look like in a couple of different classes.
Yeah.
So our first sound clip is kind of what our students are going to look at when they are first presented with a problem that they find that they don't feel like they can do. And we've all seen this, but I think the best place to go for some of these things is sci-fi and Yoda. Master That's Yoda, here. Near and dear to our heart.
Nope. We'll never get it out now.
So certain are you. Always with you, what cannot be done. Do you nothing that I say?
Master, moving stones around is one thing. This is totally different.
No, no different. Only different in your mind. You must unlearn what you have learned.
All right, I'll give it a try.
No, try not. Do. Or do not. There is no try.
You want the impossible.
All right, so.
One of the things that he says that I absolutely love is he says, you must learn, you must unlearn what you have learned. And I think that's true, in a sense. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. I mean, I see that all the time in the math classroom where they have to, they go from this, okay, this is the way I solve this problem, and I only solve it this way.
Exactly.
And then they come up to a point where that method isn't going to work. And right. they have to develop a new method.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the weaknesses in the curriculum pre-Common Core is there wasn't a value placed on knowing all these different methods. It's really like a toolbox that we're trying to get students to develop and design and put in their own tools in their own way so it makes sense to them. I mean, I very clearly come from a very hardcore math background.
Yep.
but I see the same thing in a literacy setting where we're trying to teach yes. them how to read and decode.
Yep.
And it's ironic to me that we don't teach math more like a language. Math is really describing things using mm-hmm. quantifiable figures, and we don't teach it that way. We teach it as a process, and it's really mm-hmm. not. Do you see that same kind of thing in other subject areas, Ray?
Yes, actually, I do. I actually was in a social studies class. I was at the time a one-on-one aide with a student who was learning history, and because he had difficulty with reading comprehension, he was given an assignment he had to read the information and answer the questions. But because he struggled with the reading comprehension part, you know, navigating the answers was incredibly challenging for this particular student. I saw a lot of things going on where he was doing what I'd like to call sort of escapism behaviors. He was fidgeting, he was getting up, he was like saying, I need to go to the bathroom, like any kind of excuse not to sit down and face the challenge of his work, if that makes sense. So
that makes total sense. And actually it kind of reminds me of a quote that my dad and I were talking about. I don't remember who said it, but the quote goes something along the lines of, kids will do well if they can.
That's true.
Students want to do well. And what leads to this fixed mindset is two reasons. As Carol Dweck has said in the past, they either fear getting something wrong because they've had experiences where their mistakes weren't valued and they're afraid to make a mistake and look stupid. And then the other kind of fixed mindset, which is a little bit more, it's a little harder to detect, is the student has experienced a great level of success and they don't want to return to a place where they're uncomfortable.
Right.
And that kind of leads us into our next sound clip, I think,
okay.
where we're talking about Star Trek, one of my favorite series. and there's always a problem that they have to solve. And, yes. you know, it always looks hopeless in the beginning. And I'm going to leave it right there as we play this next clip for you guys.
Okay.
Scotty, I can't change the laws of physics.
I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer.
You're a healer. There's a patient. That's an order.
That may be impossible, sir.
Things are only impossible until they're not.
Yes, sir.
Scotty.
And
can I just comment on those sound clips? In each one of those sound clips, they have someone telling them they can do it. You know, it's only impossible until it's not. You know, somebody is telling you can do it. You know, somebody is saying, damn it, I'm a doctor. I'm an engineer. Someone is telling them, you're not just that, you know, you're more than that. And in a way, that is the educator's role to be that positive mentor and that positive role model and to encourage their students and say, you're more than that. It's okay. You know, don't shut down. Don't Don't put yourself down. Don't beat yourself up. Don't be your own worst enemy. There's more to you, and you're capable of more, and we believe in you.
Right. And you know what's key is that person doesn't have the same skill set as the person he's inspiring, doesn't have the same background, doesn't have the same knowledge.
Right.
You know, Captain Kirk was the captain of the Enterprise because he was a leader. He pulled the best out of people. Captain Picard, well, he was a scientist and a student of history. It wasn't his specialty to work as a scientist. He was a leader. He was pulling the best out of the best people he had.
Right.
And I think that's very crucial in the very beginning when the students... Well,
isn't that the same with a teacher? They bring out the best in their students and they know the capabilities, you know, the strengths and weaknesses of every individual student.
Right. And I think what's also interesting about that particular sound clip was it was a bit of a rebuke to Commander Data at the end. Things are only impossible until they're not. You know, sometimes they need that kind of sharp, no, you're not giving me your best right now. And that's what I expect out of you.
Yeah. Well, not all students can bring their best every single day. You know, unfortunately, you know, when some things, you know, when there's issues, you know, outside of the classroom, it's not always easy for students to be able to bring their best and brightest and be ready.
Well, I kind of approach that a little differently.
We do our best
in
with
my...
them and do what we can to meet their basic needs and, you know, provide a safe environment.
Right. And I think this is a place where we kind of differ in our teaching styles. I try and pull out the best of my student on that day. I know I'm not necessarily looking for them to be at the tip top of performance every day, but I do make it known that when you walk into my classroom, you're going to give me the best you have that day. And it may, and it may be different from day to day. It may not be that you're going to be.
I'm sure as long as
they're
giving you something as opposed to shutting down. I mean, that's
right.
That's what we don't is the shutdown, you know, when the kids just decided they've had enough. They're not doing anymore.
Right.
And that's happened before. You know, I've had a student that got so frustrated when he was in a special education classroom that they, you know, pushed their chair from their desk and, you know, threw it. And that was because
been there before.
They did. They threw the chair. They threw the chair. And, you know, they were so angry that they wanted to punch the wall because they just had that. It was all pent up. I wasn't going to get the best out of them that in that moment. We know that. But I think there was just other things at stake. But once he got over that, and I always believe tomorrow is another day. So, okay, it wasn't great today. This happened, that happened. But, you know, once you deal with that and address it, I believe the next time things can be a lot better,
you know,
and a lot easier. And I always reflect too, what was it about that lesson that he got so frustrated about? What was it that he feel that he wasn't capable of? You know, what you observe it as a teacher, you think back and look and go, okay, what was happening before that? What was happening after it? You know, why did he get so frustrated? And what can we do? You know, I say to avoid it in the future, but these things always happen here and there. So,
Yeah, and sometimes, especially in a special education setting, the best thing you can do at that moment is, all right, Jimmy, let's go for a walk. Let's
I don't want to call it that, but that's what it is. We're putting out fires, you know, if you've got a kiddo that's, is banging his head. We want him to be safe and make
sure
the other students are safe. But we end up, going for a walk or doing what that student needs in that moment to, learn how to self-calm. And
when I was a TA in a BOCES classroom, what I would do sometimes is I would take and we would actually walk laps, not like hard, fast. You know, I'd almost let the student decide the speed as long as it was safe and reasonable. And the first lap, I didn't say anything to the student. The second lap is when I started, okay, bud, what's going on? You want to talk about it? You know, you have to give them space to feel their frustration.
Right.
In order to build that trust that's going to let you move them beyond it. And and it's, you know, the best of them that day is them, is the student understanding that they're upset and getting the student to realize why they were upset.
Exactly.
And it's hard. Like I said, I was in a preschool room. They're capable of it. And I think a mistake that a lot of teachers make is we put these labels on kids and we assume that they're not capable of a lot of things.
I was a pre-K teacher as well. And I was the lead pre-K teacher. And I have to agree with that assessment. I felt to a degree that excuses were being made for children because they were younger. And there was just a natural assumption that they're younger and therefore aren't as capable of understanding concepts or behavior. And I don't believe that at all. Like, I think, you know, if you make it clear what your routines are, make it clear what your schedules are, if you make it clear what's expected of them, it does take additional time, but they get there, you know.
Absolutely. And this is usually where I find this second stage. They get frustrated because they think that they can't do it, and that's why I tend to. I mean, of course, you've got to know your student. You've got to understand where they're at. But this is where I find that I need to push them a little bit more. I need to push them past this point of frustration for them to be successful. And really it's kind of, that kind of leads us very nicely into our next clip. So now we're leaving the sci-fi realm and we're going more into the fantasy realm with, the Lord of the Rings and, I'll just leave it there.
Yep.
Knuckles for eight.
And Rohan will answer. Master the Rohirrim.
All right, so, you know, it's not always going to come from a teacher. Ideally, it will not come from the teacher, in my opinion. Ideally, their help will come from themselves. Ideally, the student will reach a point where, oh, this first piece makes sense. Now that I know that this first piece makes sense, I'm going to play around with this other piece until something fits.
And as we were talking about with the growth mindset, to me, that's that aha moment, you know, that, we're finally starting to understand it. We're starting to...
Right, and it doesn't mean that they're not making a mistake.
No, that's true.
In my experience, towards the elementary end of education, we're terrified of having the student make a mistake. I have taught in an elementary classroom, and I remember having that feeling. This was also before I knew about the growth mindset and knew that mistakes were a huge piece of learning. You have to make a mistake to learn something. If you are not struggling to understand something, you are not learning something. You're merely repeating what you already know.
Right. And it leads the students into a full sense of security and full sense of confidence if they think they've mastered the material, you know, and you know, that's not the case, that there's still some more learning that needs to be done.
Absolutely. And this is where it becomes very important not to belittle a student for making a mistake. And I am using a strong word there. Because when you are overly negative about a student's performance, about a student's efforts, they learn to not put forth an effort because it's not valued. I see this in multiple places that I have worked in. I have seen this outside of education, and it's what leads to burnout. Students experience burnout just like a teacher experiences burnout.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I don't think we recognize that enough sometimes. And this is the key point where it happens. If you are continuing to work and work and work and work, and you feel like you're not making any progress, and you've got somebody coming down, coming at your throat for making a small mistake.
Yeah.
You know, what's your incentive to do better?
Well, exactly. Yeah. And it's not helping the student. I don't feel it's even remotely helping the student. If you're sort of making them feel bad about the lack of progress that they've already made, you know, berating them, using a sort of, I don't want to say derogatory tone, you know, using a tone that is sharp, you know, make it, they're not, obviously they don't want to make mistakes in the first place. I'm sure they're not doing it deliberately. You know, I think there's a certain amount of pressure on educators, you know, because of the way we're evaluated. And, you know, I think, you know, in this particular world that we're living in, especially right now with the quarantine and the distance learning, I think there's a lot of pressure on teachers to keep things going and keep things going well. And that's not easy, you know. They have a lot going on.
Absolutely. You've got to know how to press your students. I had a math teacher in high school, and I believe he's still teaching. So I'm not going to say his name because, unfortunately, while he was one of my favorite teachers, he would be ridiculed for some of the things that he did in his classroom, even though he got very good results. And he got very good results because he knew that he was pressing us to be better. I made certain that I was careful with my work. Mm-hmm. He would never harass you for making a mistake, but he would kind of pick on you pretty heavily if you made the same mistake over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, that was a motivating factor. For another girl in my class, she did shut down because of it. So you really have to know and change your style to suit your students. And to, you know, for me, it was perfect. That was the help I needed.
Mm-hmm.
I needed someone to say, hey, you're being a bonehead. Stop it.
Yeah.
But for other people, they need that, okay, you made a mistake. That's okay. Let's move on.
Yeah. It's not easy. I think as educators, it's not easy to get that balance, you know. But you're completely right. What works for one student and what works for another is just two different things.
Right. And I should add that if you told me I made a mistake, it's okay, let's move on, I'm not going to fix that mistake. I need that person to sit there and be on my butt telling me that I need to work harder at getting things right the first time. I need someone to drive me.
Yeah.
To do better.
There's the difference between a motivated student and a non-motivated student. You know, it's like there's a difference between somebody who's struggling to learn the material and somebody who doesn't want to learn the material.
Right. And I would actually say that girl that who was in my class was actually trying very hard to learn the material. She mm-hmm. just had a more meek personality than I did.
Mm-hmm.
And she was very intelligent, very smart. It was actually a pre-calculus class that I was in. So we're dealing with some intelligent students. I don't think any of us were accelerated. We were seniors for the most part in the class, a couple of juniors who were accelerated. But that is the environment that I needed to be in to thrive. And I still respect him to this day. I saw him a couple months ago, you know, and... Mm-hmm. You know, finally, teacher and student, we're kind of both teachers now. We happen to be at an establishment which was offering beverages. And, you know, I walked up to him and said, thank you for driving me. Thank you for pushing me.
Oh, that's great.
But that's not the reaction he would get out of all of his students.
Mm-hmm. No, not at all.
You know, so, but he allowed me to have the type of confidence that's in our next sound clip. It's one of my favorite lines out of any movie. And I'm just going to leave it right there.
You will be dead men. 1,000 nations of the Persian Empire descend upon you. Our arrows will blot out the sun.
Then we will fight in the shade.
You know, and at the end of the pit, that's where our students should be. They should have mastered it so well that, you know, they could face the Persian army with their knowledge. I it's just one of those quotes, you know,
I love that quote, particularly for that reason, because it shows their determination and drive to continue onwards and fight onwards regardless. We're not scared. We're moving forward regardless.
Well, and you know,
can't stop us.
The entire premise of the 300 Spartans, you know, I love it because it's a classic story, you know, handed down from generations. And to this day, we talk about the 300 Spartans who stood up against impossible odds just because they knew it was the right thing to do. They knew that they weren't coming home, but they knew that they loved their country so much that they were willing to die for it so that the rest of their country could live on. And they fought so fiercely that they turned around an army that outnumbered them at least 10-1.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all kinds of growth mindset stuff going on in there.
I love it. Yeah, it's a great clip.
So the idea of the pit activity is really that we want to have our students come up with their own learning pit. We want them to understand that there is you're going to get something and you're going to have that deer in the headlights moment. You're going to then feel like it's impossible and unfair.
Mm-hmm.
But then all of a sudden something's going to click and you're going to start to gain confidence. And then you're going to reach mastery.
If Luke Skywalker can do it, so can you.
If Luke Skywalker can do it, so can you.
Exactly.
Was there anything you wanted to add there, Rachel? I know I've been quite verbose lately.
No, you pretty much covered everything in that regard. You know, in regard to the learning pit and them getting to that other side is really great and very rewarding when that student does reach the end of that journey and gets there and has learned something and. You know, you can see the confidence in that student, and you know they're smiling, their demeanor changes, their attitude changes, and they realize something about themselves. You know, it's like you see the self-discovery, and that's one of the things that I love about being an educator is being there for those moments where they're, like I said, with the growth mindset, that ha-ha moment. Oh, we got this. We figured this out. I had a student who really struggled with math, and it's the same instance. You know, it took a very long time, but every morning, every day, I would spend more time with him if I could, and we got there, and he learned it. But it was not easy for him. I think sixth grade math, Common Core math. So it really was brand new, and it wasn't easy for him. He had
right.
a lot
and,
going
and he didn't and have this. He didn't have the scaffolding he needed.
No, he didn't have supportive parents. He just unfortunately had a lot going on and you know, in and out of school. And he was very distracted. And I think he took one look at the Common Core math and felt instantly frightened of it. You know, he just saw, like you say, it's like a language. You know, when people can learn to read, it's great. It's like they can read all these books. But I think he just took one look at what was being asked of him and just instantly, again, shut down and thought he couldn't do it. So we broke it down, or I gave him other problems. I showed him, you know, used manipulatives, tried different strategies and methods with him that would help him see the problem in a different light. And, you know, at first he was pushing his worksheet away and saying, nope, can't do this. No, I'm not doing this. No, I'm... And, you know, he would sort of do the eye roll or he'd look away. And that's what we got. And then, you know, after, I think he realized after about a week, not even that, that it was not, that being like that, that being resistive was not going to suddenly make this work go away. We weren't suddenly going to say, okay, fine, don't do it then. He realized that every morning that this work was going to be here. And if we shut down, it would be there the next day and it would be there. And he had to confront it. And once he confronted the fact that he had to do this work and he had to learn this particular math problem, and this particular, I can't remember what it was, but he decided, okay, fine, I'll do this bit. Fine, I'll do that bit. Fine. And then soon, you know.
Soon you could hand him a worksheet of the same problem and you would be able to, oh, well then fine, we'll do it in the shade, you know, kind of thing.
I once realized that I was determined and I sat with him every morning and he realized that that wasn't going to go away until he'd done this, you know, that he needed to learn it. And once he learned it, once he was able to solve those problems, it was like, see, you could do it. What were you talking about? You can't do it.
It's just so unfortunate that we can't sit with all of the students who need that kind of support.
With
our class sizes being what they are. I see my kids 40 minutes a day per class. Some days I will see them 80 minutes. That might change this next year because I teach a math lab for the course that I teach. But
I bet you don't even see lunch, do you? Do you get a prep time?
I do. I'm fortunate enough. I get 2 prep times and a lunch. But being honest with the population I work with, they're great kids. They are awesome kids. I really enjoy working with my kids. But they have a lot of needs outside of school. And the sheer amount of energy required to address those needs before we even talk about content is overwhelming, and on the scale that it is for the population I'm servicing.
I feel like so much more is expected of the educator. You know, we have to be that counselor. And I think, you know, a lot of us do so gladly to serve the students, but it can be also very draining for the educator. Professor Dr. Harvey at SUNY Potsdam, he told me once an analogy about a bucket full of apples, and he got this from I think it was called Invitational
Education, probably. Yeah,
right. That's right. Where if you have a bucket full of apples, and you keep giving your attention to this person and your this to that person, and you keep giving out apples, you know, you have nothing left to give. You have no more apples left out of that basket. So I think, you know, we give so much during the day of ourselves as educators, you know, to providing a good curriculum, to providing, an interesting, engaging lesson, to being, we go through so much, you know, dealing with a lot of work, emails and, you know, IEP meetings. We're dealing with a lot of things. And I think, you know, it can be very exhausting and very draining. We need to remember that we need to think about ourselves and make a little more time for ourselves, but we don't. There's no time to have.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
I think we could have a whole episode, and maybe we'll do that in the near future.
Right. It's called self-care, but, you know.
How can we still give of ourselves but maintain what we need to be happy, healthy, and able to continue to give what we give our students, and find that work-life balance and find out where it is, and being able to set the boundaries and set an appropriate boundary that works for both the school and yourself. I think we're going to definitely do an episode on that.
That would be great, yeah.
But I think we need to kind of pull back to to the
designing
growth mindset design.
Growth mindset lessons.
And I'm gonna give myself a rule. I am not gonna talk about mathematics. There are all kinds of resources out there for mathematics. I'm gonna plug one right now, ucubed.org. It is a website set up by Joe Bowler. She has all kinds of different activities. She is working her way up through the grades. I think she's currently sitting at finished sixth grade last time I checked, which was a couple months ago. So she probably has beyond sixth grade at this point.
Can you invite her on the show?
Oh, I'd love to get her on the show. I don't think we could pay her speaking fee, though.
We'll pay in apples. There you go. Apples in a basket. We'll give them out to her.
But, you know, there again, talk about having to set limits. I'm sure she would love to come and spread her word as much as possible, but she's got her teaching responsibilities and all of that on her plate, in addition to running that organization, ucubed.org.
So she needs some self-care. She's got a lot on the plate. She probably needs some self-care.
So why don't we start off talking about designing growth mindset lessons in social studies?
So I'd like to give an example of something that I did with my students, and this was a sixth grade class. I wanted to make them more aware of themselves. It was a social studies sixth grade class. And what I did was I had the students learn about their heritage by finding out their own names and heritage. Like we did plenty of research. So for example, with me, I guess my last name is Bender, and I guess that's from, it's like Germanic, and it means, I think it's a blacksmith thing. So there's like the certain shields and heraldic things about your own name. The reason why I wanted them to learn, this was a social studies class, and we were discussing, things such as feudalism and European history. And I wanted them to look into their own history and their own ancestry. Because I wanted them to see what their own ancestors can achieve so that they too they can realize themselves that they're also capable of achieving the same kinds of things. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. We really need to engage these activities that the student is going to see value in, and that the student is going to pull something that they find useful and ties into their own life. So,
yeah.
And in social studies, it's not always easy.
No, and it was good because it was engaging the students. They would go home and ask their parents, what they knew about their ancestors, what they knew, about their name, and how did they get their last name, and what does their last name mean? So there was a lot of sort of independent research going on. They were really enjoying these activities. And additionally, when I had them look into their heraldry, I had them like draw their own shield, draw the shields of their last name, from their research. And they were very invested in that artwork, and it meant something to them personally, which was great too. It was a really great assignment. We took those shields and we put them outside our classroom on a bulletin board, and they were very proud to display those. It was a really wonderful activity, and I got to hear about my students and their ancestors and things that their ancestors have done. Whether they were immigrants or not, that sort of thing. Whether their name was Italian or we got to explore lots of different things. So I thought it was a great growth mindset, because they were like, my ancestor was hypothetically a king, that's cool. those types of things. So it was great.
Absolutely. And, I remember my sixth grade social studies so well because we did activities like that. And there are actually two that spring to mind. We pulled a medieval job out of a hat. I remember to this day, I was the falconer.
I love falconers.
So I got to live in the castle. I got to take care of an animal, which was to me it was fantastic. And I got to attend the medieval dinner as an official guest and not have to serve the other people around me. So we actually had the townsfolk come in and serve the people who lived in the castle food, And we all made we all made a dish that would have I made like a barley stew, and
that sounds so fun.
Oh, it was. And memorable, clearly, because I remember vividly what we did. You know, and you can talk about PBL all you want. That was PBL before PBL was in vogue. And it and it was done in a way that was, I think, more PBL than most schools do PBL. That's another episode we've got to cover, is appropriate PBL. We'll make sure that we hit that as well.
In this particular social studies class, I had the students, I gave them titles. You know, I gave one a title, and he was Lord. And I said, how about if I give you Lance, and a title, you know, is that good with you? And he was like, yes, I get to be a Lord. And I said, okay, great, sign here. And then I said to him, okay, now you have to fight in the Crusades. So you have to leave your lands and leave everything and go. And he's like, well, that's not fair. I'm like, well, I'm the queen. This is what I get to tell you what to do. You know, this is how it really happened. You have to go.
Right. Keep your diary and we'll talk about it as a class in ELA. You know, we're getting that nice cross curricular stuff going on.
Yeah.
And that's one of the beautiful things about growth mindset lessons is that they can really draw out and bleed into other subject areas, and it makes everybody's planning that much.
Oh yeah, but nicer. I was able to incorporate ELA, like you say, with journals and also art, with them coloring in their own heraldry. So
you know, and one of my favorite things in ELA kind of borders on this. I love to when I do get the chance to teach an ELA class, I love to do lit circles. And you know, there again, one of my favorite roles is the artful artist, the questioner, and the connector. You know, and they kind of do that. They go through and they ask questions, and you would be so shocked at how deep of a question they can come up with if they're properly trained how to ask a question. It seems like that's something that they should do naturally, is ask a question, but we need to make sure that we're teaching them how to ask those deep questions.
And at the college level, they call it the Socratic, the Socratic method, the Socratic, where they engage in discussion, where they read something and then engage in discussion, regarding it.
Right. And it's all about creating that low floor but a high ceiling. You want to have every student be able to experience some success. Yeah. So you set the bare minimum for them, and then you get shocked by how much deeper they go into it.
And that's wonderful.
And that
engaged deeper thinking is really important.
Every group of students where you set them up with a low floor but have the question be that if they answer that, they're not quite satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's asking those questions. For me, I know I promised I wouldn't talk about math, but I did a math modeling problem with my group of students because it was something different. I'm not going to say it was less rigorous. It was less standards based, but it was still a rigorous activity. I asked them, is it better to rent or own a house? And is it better to rent or own a car? And I explained, and I said, these are a yes, no answer is not acceptable. I need you to tell me your thinking. I need you to do your own research. I'm not giving you the information. As a matter of fact, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not interested in whether you think it's better to rent or own a house or rent or own a car. I'm interested in how you arrive at your answer. And I was just blown away. Some of the students who, for their English teacher, would barely write a paragraph, were giving me pages and pages of
that's awesome
analysis.
They're invested in it, and I like that too, because this is something they are going to have to think about later down the road.
Absolutely, and I actually had a parent who. We've sometimes we have difference of opinion. And that was the case with this particular parent. And that parent actually emailed me to thank me for giving her son that opportunity. So
it
not only built bridges with my students and got them thinking outside the box, but it was something that what the parents saw the value to. And it wasn't about the standards. It was about what is something that this student is going to need and need to know. And I think that is, if you start there, the rest of it's going to fall into place.
And I mean, it sounds like they were very personally invested in the assignment, and that's even better.
Absolutely.
Once you can hook them.
I think that one's going in my scrapbook.
Oh, yes. That's fantastic. I'm going to borrow that one.
Actually, I get most of my modeling examples from a website called SIAM. It's a math modeling competition that high schoolers can take part in. And there's all kinds of math modeling resources. We were supposed to talk about math modeling today, but I think we're running out of time.
Yeah.
So I'm actually going to push that back at some point. We're definitely going to talk about that. So today we talked about the pit of learning and kind of the learner's journey, if you will. We started with do or do not. There is no try. You know, the teacher being, listen, this is a very tough example that I'm going to give you, and you're going to have to work at it. You know, the kind of the rebellion of the students. You know, I'm an engineer, not a miracle worker. You know, that kind of stage. And then we went to the beacons are lit. You know, the student has finally progressed enough on their own that they're starting to see some hope, that they're starting to be able to move forward. And the goal is to get to then we'll fight in the shade stage.
Yeah.
You know, I am so confident in this activity that I found so difficult before that I can do it in my sleep. Bring it. Let's go.
Yeah.
And then we talked about a couple of specific cases where we could implement growth mindset without doing a whole lot different in our classrooms. You know, from social studies, just getting them to shift their mindset from learning facts and dates to what would it have actually been like. And we said several examples where I remember from my sixth grade about 15 years ago or so. Oof, that hurts.
You didn't have to mention numbers, but you are a mathematician.
I am a numbers guy. But, you know, remembering something from 15 years ago as if it were...
That's how pivotal it was for you.
Yesterday. I didn't even get to talk about the kinds of things I did when Carol Rossi Fries was my social studies teacher, New York State Teacher of the Year. And so there were some fabulous lessons from that time period as well. And we talked about ELA and just lit circles. If you are not doing lit circles in ELA, do it.
Do them. Definitely do it.
Just do it. Well, I think our hour is up. And I'd like to thank you for listening. Our next recorded show is scheduled to come out on June 15th. Feel free to join our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/TeacherTalkNewYork. That's all lowercase letters.
Yeah. And we'll be there as well to answer any questions.
And feel free to
Joe?
Yep, feel free to write us and let us know what you want to talk about. So far it's been two educators that want to spread the gospel, but we're more than willing to talk about issues that you're having in your classroom and ways to handle it and pooling our resources to help you. That's what this podcast is all about.
That's right. We're here to help.
Well, and this is Matt Snyder signing off.
Okay. This is Rachel Bender. It's been wonderful. Thank you, everybody.